Hey guys, my name's Charlie.
And I'm Kevin.
And we are the Holiday Bros, and you're listening to the Holiday Bros Podcast.
Holiday Bros. Holiday Bros. Holiday Bros. Holiday Bros.
Good tidings to you, Kevin, and to the listeners out there. This is the Holiday Bros Podcast, and on today's episode, we're going to be discussing
the Polar Express.
This is the Holiday Bros Podcast number 14. It's also being recorded on, what's today's date? December 2nd.
December 2nd. It is our pop-ups, the dearly departed pop-ups birthday today.
It is. Happy birthday.
National Potato Ball Day.
Oh yeah, I love it. So the Polar Express was released on November 10th, 2004.
It's a little early for Christmas movies.
It is, but I don't know, November. I'm already in the holiday movement.
I'm putting the lights in my car at that point.
That's the thing, it's after Halloween, so you're in the holiday spirit right after Halloween.
Yeah, well, if we were a department store, we would have been in the spirit for a month and a half already.
Yeah. Hence, you get a movie like The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I know. The Polar Express, I'll be honest, first time I watched this was about maybe 3 years ago.
Surprise?
It weirded me out. Like, I wanted nothing to do with it.
Why? It's very good. Listen, though, I'll tell you who it was written by. It was written by, I have three names here. I have three names for a different reason. It was written by Chris von Allsburg. That's his name. He wrote the book that the movie is based on. Robert Zemeckis wrote the screenplay. And it was also written by William, I think it's Broyles Jr. He did the screenplay as well as Robert Zemeckis. Robert Zemeckis, we've talked about him before.
I was going to say, that name sounds very familiar.
Yeah, he did the Back to the Future films. He did a few other holiday movies. He did that Monster House. He did some Tales from the Crypt. That's where we talked about him.
Okay.
He did Tales from the Crypt and some of the cartoons and the TV show. But yeah, that's where we talked about him before. And we had also mentioned about him doing the Polar Express. But yeah, he's a pretty famous guy. Wrote a lot of stuff.
Well, with this movie, again, when I first saw it, I mean, I think what weirded me out, and I'm really jumping far ahead right now just for a second.
Sure.
But literally, I remember it was on ABC Family. This is a couple years ago before I watched it. And the very first scene that was on when I turned it on was this part, way near the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So I see this silver bell bouncing into the really, really slow, like, it sounded dark and creepy, and I thought it was Michael Bublé singing it, but that's what I first saw, and I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. I see. I like that scene, but
no,
now
I do now. Like, now that I know the movie, I really love it. It's a staple of mine every year now. But I mean, that was how I got introduced to the Polar Express.
Yeah, that would be a weird scene. There, well, while we're in that whole North Pole area, another scene in there that I always hated was the video replay of the kid. I didn't do it. I hated it.
Yeah. Well, there's.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
There you go.
I didn't do it.
I know I said that Robert Zemeckis also wrote it, but he also was the director on this one as well.
Well, now that you're on that, even though I was going to get to that point anyway, the I didn't do it. All those kids on the screen. Now, because it was such a fuzzy, bluish screen, it was very hard to tell. Were they real people or was that CGI?
I think, no, this film, I'm glad you brought that up. This film is actually in the Guinness Book of World Record. It is the very first film to be 100% all digital captured film.
Okay, all right. Well, I know what you mean by that.
Yeah, actual people wearing the old styrofoam balls and suits and all that stuff. So there's the whole movie is like that. That's the very first one.
So those screens were also CGI.
Correct.
Well, I'm calling it CGI. As in just computer graphics, but so because again, I think it's because of the graininess of the TV, and I guess if you were really to, you know, that like there's a certain creepiness still about them trying to portray faces and stuff.
Hey. And, well, have you seen the movie WALL-E?
No.
Oh, okay. See, that movie, it's an animated movie, but it does have real people in it. So you could see, I don't want to say like real, the way it blends them, it's hard to explain, but it would be similar to what you're thinking the Polar Express was. Like you thought those kids on the TV were real. Mm-hmm. It's a similar mm-hmm. effect like that on WALL-E, where the president is actually a human and he he's in the movie like that.
But it's still a computer graphic of the, like a lot of the games, like Call of Duty and stuff, all the famous actors that do the voiceovers, it's actually their faces and everything.
Well, like the new Star Wars Battlefront too. But no, this was actually the people in WALL-E. It's actual humans. It's not even digital.
So
you'll
like,
have to look.
So it's like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, and I can't think. It's Will. I can't think of the comedian's name. He's an older guy, but he was the president in that movie.
Willem
but
Dafoe?
Anyway, that's no. Fred Willard. It was Fred Willard. That was who the president was. But anyway, let's get back to the Polar Express.
Man, you keep bringing
it up. 2004. Animation in 2004. If you look at this film, like I was going to say, I always want to know what this film would look like if it was made now. It would look 100% different.
Well, I think they'd be able to get, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the faces, but there's still a creepiness, especially the mouth area.
See, I always thought it was the eyes.
Well, no, the eyes definitely. I mean, that's a given, but I mean, adding a little bit to the mouth, especially with the little girl.
Yeah. Every time I see this movie, I just think if this was made now, it would look so much better, but I love it for what it is. Like
13 years from now, you'll be saying the same thing if it was redone today.
Yeah, I know. I'd probably hate it though if it was redone.
I guess the best you could really do is just get real actors.
Yeah, that's true.
For the best graphics.
Yeah.
Again, the Polar Express. Again, we go under the assumption you guys know what these movies are, so this one's a kind of detailed one to go into. But it, you know, pretty much the premise is the boy, which is credited as Hero Boy, but I did do a little bit of research, and apparently the kid's name is actually Chris.
Yeah, that's what what I came up with too. That's because that's who the story was written by, Chris Van Allsburg.
All right. Well, they it appears that this what is he like 12, 13? He's at that brink of starting to think that Santa Claus may not be real. And
12, 13? There's no way he's that old.
I think I finally got it around 15.
Oh man, I guess I never really put an age to this kid.
I don't know. Maybe all right. Maybe not 12 or all right. Well, all right. Maybe not 13, but maybe
I'll say 10.
I think doesn't he actually? I think he might actually go over his age when the conductor, which I never thought that was a conductor. I thought the conductor was always in the engine, but
the engineer.
Yeah, I guess. All right, so. So much I know about trains, Dad would be disappointed.
Yeah, he would.
especially with my conductor hat at home.
I was going to say, I'm taking that hat back. Stomping on it.
But I'm almost positive he goes over his age when he, reads him, is this you? And he mentions, I think, maybe the age and whatnot. But there's a lot of good stuff. And even the very beginning, like, this movie gives me such a good feeling in a lot of different areas. And the beginning is one of them. Now, one thing that we need to realize is that Tom Hanks is credited for pretty much every single adult character.
I think he does five
in this
of them.
Movie. Well, now, he's also credited in the credits as Hero Boy. And I had to do a heck of a lot of research to see, because that's not his voice. And I needed to see exactly what he is credited for Hero Boy. But I found two conflicting stories, though. One,
all right, sorry to cut you off. I said I found a story as well, so maybe we'll have to compare. Maybe we have the same story.
All right, so the one story I have is that the reason he's credited as Hero Boy is because he is the one that did all this, the animation, putting on the little balls and doing the actual facial expressions and work of the kid. However, though, upon further research, I'm being told that Josh Hutcherson... Actually, no, he was the physical inspiration. Maybe that was it. Josh Hutcherson was the physical inspiration for the Hero Boy. But yeah, what I looked up is that Tom Hanks was credited because he actually did all the capture for him.
Right. I did see that as well. But then I also came across a weird conspiracy theory.
Oh, there's a lot of them out there. And I even want to get into those right now.
Okay, so then I'll hold on.
Yeah, there's no, I got a lot of them.
I was going to say, that might be how Tom Hanks could be credited as Hero Boy, though.
I don't think, you don't do it for the story. You don't credit somebody for the imaginal, like, for the possibility of what the storyline is.
But who is the main narrator voice?
The main narrator voice is Tom Hanks.
Okay, and he's telling a story about this kid, and that he's not saying that it's a different kid, right?
Like, all right, so maybe they're saying, but wouldn't they call it narrator? Like, it's Hero Boy, though, not narrator, Hero Man. I mean, yes, that's Tom Hanks as an adult. So that kid that we see, Tom Hanks narrating, is him as an adult.
Okay, so that's where one of the things come into play, but I'll talk about that.
All right, yeah, we'll get into that, because I got some stuff about that. So,
back to your plot. You never really... So, if you want to go over the plot, you kind of just trailed off there, because if you were to read the online version of what the plot is, it doesn't really give you that good feeling. Like you were saying, at the beginning of the movie, you get all the sounds, the sights.
Yeah, really... well, they're not going to go into that in plot detail, but again, this kid is on the brink of, thinking Santa Claus isn't real anymore, and he's not going to believe... And it's one of those things where, as what we could all relate to as adults is that year that you finally found out, the magic's gone, as they say, within the movie. And it's just almost disappointing in a way. And then you don't get that Christmassy feeling anymore. So he's at that area where that gray area where is it true? Like he has a lot of evidence, about Santa's going on strike and all this different stuff.
I like that he's storing it away.
I know. And what year the movie takes place, I can't remember. I think it's in the 60s, maybe. But at the very beginning here, and again, this might be hard for you to hear, but it's just one of those things that I'm like, man, like, I could relate to a lot of the things. So this is the two parents.
We used to stay awake all night waiting for Santa.
And those days are just about over.
Oh, that would be sad if that were true.
Yeah. End of the magic.
So they were talking about, the boy was pretending to sleep, but they figured he was already asleep, and saying that he used to stay up for Santa all the time, all night long, and, Tom Hanks, who plays his father as well in here, said, yeah, that would be disappointing, an end to the magic, and which the kid kind of opens up his eyes, though they can't see that because he's laying on his side. And, I get it, definitely an end of the magic. It's like, man, like I, even as an adult, I still try to find some of that Christmas magic somewhere. It's freaking hard as hell, though.
Yeah. I mean, at least now with having kids, you get to relive it a little bit more,
Yeah. I mean, there's, it's not me, though.
Yeah, I know. But you get to watch someone, live it, which is a good feeling.
One of the next scenes, though, is something that it happens to me all the time. And it just, it's one of those things, especially during Christmas, it reminds me of my youth as well. And that is with, again, this might be hard for you to hear, the ticking of the clock.
Oh, yeah.
So literally, he's laying in bed, he looks over, it's about 10:20 at night, and he closes his eyes, you hear the ticking as you heard, then all of a sudden the ticking fades. You hear like a high-pitched sound fades into nothing. And then the little hubcap kind of rattles and wakes him up again. So we see it in real time, and what we see is, what, a matter of 5 seconds. To 8 seconds, and he looks over, and then it's 5 to midnight. And I'm like, man, that's happened to me so many times where I've closed my eyes, and I literally thought I blinked, and it's already a couple hours later. It's just a weird feeling.
Yeah. Now, that time is important.
It is important, and I mentioned that as well. Later. Or now. Doesn't matter.
So you can mention it now.
It's all, the entire movie, it's always 5 to midnight.
Right.
But there's a reason for that, and I never thought about it until I watched it again this week.
I'm trying to think what you would come up with, just because of it being Christmas.
Yeah. But there's... Do you want me to jump ahead?
No, we'll get there when we get there.
All right.
But that whole, radiator in his bedroom. I miss those tall radiators.
I do too. I could still feel the heat remanating. Like, I would, again, one of those weird feelings when I would go up, you know, and especially now that Pop-Up's gone. Again, very ironic, today's his birthday. But I would just, sometimes when I'd go to visit Mam-Mam, especially in the winter, there'd be snow on the roof. I would go up into the bathroom. I always went up to the bathroom upstairs, but I'd go there, go into the room, and I'd go to the bathroom, but then I would just sit in that wooden chair for a little bit, and I'd hang out over that radiator, and I'd feel the heat coming up. I'd see all the snow there on the roof, the wind swirling some of it around, and God, oh my, that just, I could close my eyes, and I'd be like 8 or 9 again crying for Mom. I mean, it was just, like such a great feeling.
I do love that feeling. It's so hard to explain. Like, I don't know if, like, people listening like out there have like have those weird things. Like,
it's definitely like a nostalgic moment. Like, nostalgia hits you.
Yeah, because when I lived up in town, I had the tall radiators like that, and there's nothing better than coming in on a winter day and just laying your stuff out on the radiator like that and letting it dry up and warm up.
Yeah, like, you don't have to worry about fires. That's all steam in there.
Yeah, those are great. But speaking of steam, so the boy's radiator starts steaming, and then it blows out of the front like a whistle of a train, right? And then it just, he looks out the window, sees the train coming. Oh, that's a good feeling. But then I always enjoyed the how it just is out there, no tracks. It's just out in the snow.
Well, no, the tracks are covered.
Nah, I don't think those are there later.
Nope. No, because at the beginning, all right, I didn't do the whole clip, but after they, the parents, after they say about the end of the magic, she kisses him. And then one of my favorite things, it gives me some tingles, is hearing the voice of Tom Hanks going, out like a light. The express train wouldn't wake him now. So the express train right there, that, it has to mean the train right by their house. Like, that wouldn't wake him now. A train definitely runs by.
I don't remember. I don't know if I saw a track.
Out like a light.
Tom Hanks has such a great voice, too.
He does. I love Tom Hanks. And that's, you know... he's enjoyable. Some people would say it's trendy to like him, but fuck it. I love him.
Yeah. Hey, we've liked him since we were little. We were big fans.
We were big, fans.
You know what I'm saying? I believe Robert Zemeckis also worked on two other films with him. He did, I believe he did Castaway and Forrest Gump.
Well, and this is where the whole, in my mind, the plot, not maybe like a twist, and this is the never-ending question of this movie. Once this train comes, is this a dream?
Well, the ending would have you believe no.
It would, but it's just, it's time, odd. It's, I mean,
time doesn't move the whole movie until the end, so that would believe, make you believe it does, it is a dream.
And it's one of those things where you can't, because anybody could just throw out, it's a damn movie, like, let it go, whatever it is, but our job is to pick the shit apart.
See, I think, I mean, it's just...
That is one of the biggest questions online. Like, there's a lot of shit on the Polar Express, if you look it up. Like, there are Reddit fucking forums and shit left and right about this movie, and about the odds and ends about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of stuff floating around out there about it. I did a little research, too. That's why I said, like, it's down to the point where there's, like, weird conspiracy theories about this movie.
Like, working with the Illuminati.
Exactly. Like, the one... Okay, I'm just going to talk about the one that I was saying now, like, why he also might get the name, like, why he's credited as Hero Boy. So, there's a theory out there that the conductor of the train is a time traveler, and that is actually the Hero Boy as an adult who comes back to help the Hero Boy find the spirit of Christmas and find the meaning and believe.
Yeah.
That's also why his voice is the same voice when he's older, because that's him in the future, and he time traveled back. So that's one of the theories out there.
I love the biggest theory out there is that Tom Hanks just wanted to be greedy and take on, do all the voices.
I did see that. He was like, no, he's doing them all.
But, and again, we'll get to it in a little bit, but then just to, you know, counter that is that the other theory that goes along with that. Now, I didn't look at it as a time traveler, but I looked at it as Hero Boy gets onto the train, so this is what his life turns into, going and saving other people. And then I'm sure you all also saw that the hobo is the complete opposite, the guy on top of the train, is that that would be, he's Hero Boy if he never, I mean, I hate the name Hero Boy. We're calling him Chris. He is Chris if he never got on the train.
See, I didn't think of it like that. I just thought of it as,
like, because then he stopped believing. Because think about it, even with, I got a lot to talk about with that hobo. All right, we'll get there.
I like that they call him hobo. 2004, that was still in vogue.
Yeah.
So that's why we're allowed to say it now, because we're talking about something that happened in 2004.
Correct. I mean, it's a legit term. I mean, I guess the PC people might take offense to it.
I definitely enjoy just the old hobo on a train bit, though.
Yeah. I think it reminds me of Pee-wee. Yeah, like sardines? Imported.
Name's Jack.
Why would we always do that with chicken noodles from Campbell's?
Because they were slurpy.
That's another.
Sardines.
So, so the Polar Express pulls up.
Why to the North Pole, of course. This is the Polar Express.
And a lot of people question, again, we're pulling shit apart for no reason in some things. You know, sometimes you do just have to let it go. It's a friggin' movie. But a lot of people are like, their biggest concern is, why is this kid getting on a strange train?
Yeah.
But one thing that really strikes me, and again, it's one of those, kind of gives me a little kid, you know, good feeling, is that him warning him about climbing on board. Like, it's that crucial year. And I always think to myself, like, man, like, if he didn't climb on board, if he just went back to bed, like, all of it would be gone.
But, yeah, he would just wake up a non-believer.
Yeah.
Well, it says here, no photo with the department store Santa this year. No letter to Santa. And you made your sister put up the milk and cookies. Sounds to me like this is your crucial year. If I were you, I would think about climbing on board.
So even there, the conductor looks at it as, it's the kid's crucial year. Like, it's pretty much, this is it. Either you're
don't
coming on or
now,
not.
Your life's changing forever.
But see, even with that, then it makes me look at, like, the girl. Like, why is she on that train? Is the train only for people who are about to not believe? Or is there different circumstances in why you would be on the train? Like, was this girl... I guess everybody has to learn a lesson, hence the ticket punching. And is that maybe what this is all about, is just learning? Oh, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe the... See, now it's all... coming to me. His job, his thing was to believe. Her job was to learn to lead. Maybe this is all just about some type of life lesson.
Yep. Because one of the...
And when not I just was necessarily writing, Christmas.
Right. When I was writing down my plot, I had it as a young boy embarks on the magical adventure to the North Pole on the Polar Express. But during his adventure, he learns about friendship, bravery, and the spirit of Christmas.
Did you write that or pull that from some? You pulled that from Plex or something, didn't you?
I pulled.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you talking.
No, I like to pull the plots just to see how it compares to what we just watched.
Yeah.
I enjoy doing that to see if it actually does tell you what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so while we're talking about those other kids, there was one other person that had a crucial voice. You might not mean much to you, but I know him from a few different things.
Yeah, so do I. The annoying kid.
Yeah, so... what all do you know him from? I could tell you two things that you would know him from, maybe.
I know him from Donnie from Follow That Bird. He was Donnie, and I'm Donnie. Something else. You and I talked about this a couple pods ago. So,
he was Manduk on Dexter's Lab. He was the evil guy.
I never watched that show.
Yeah, that was a good one. He was like, it is I, Manduk. He was like the evil guy that was Dexter's nemesis. And then one other thing was on the Weird Al show. He used to have his own comedy show, and he was the man that was trapped in the wall. So you never actually saw him. He was just supposedly stuck behind the wall. So you just heard his voice. That was about it. Well, but he does voice a lot of cartoons.
Did you ever see a picture of him? He looks like identical to the kid.
He's pretty good image of that kid. Even if you look up his current image, he still looks
that's exactly what he looks like.
Yeah.
Hey.
Which I guess if you motion capture it.
Do you know what kind of train this is?
So the conductor, I guess, scares...
Oh, sorry. That guy's name was Eddie Deason.
Yeah, I know it was Eddie something. But the conductor scares Chris enough, I think, that he decides not to get on. So they start to take off, and then like 2 seconds later, he's like, no, I want on. And hands up climbing on board. Now, Now, the music in this, there's a lot of music on here that gives me a John Williams feeling, and there's also a lot, especially, you know, with those subtle tunes in there, especially later on with Santa. It has Danny Elfman written all over it, very Edward Scissorhand-like.
Right. That song is very Danny Elfman to me, that one that you just played, just because it's the vocal sounds of the music like
yeah.
that.
So he gets on the train, and then again, you know, he kind of starts meeting all the people, and that friggin' that annoying kid goes nuts with the. But again, it's weird when they get into the city, and even the girl explains stuff that you and I experience. I know Kelly does in, as well, is it like things feeling Christmassy and and cozy and everything with that damn store.
Herbisheimers!
Driving through a good old city.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I know Aiden loves this movie. Carrie didn't want to watch it last night. Kind of bubble. But that's one of, it's one of the movies where if it's on, I'll watch it. I haven't seen it on, I think I saw it on TV once or twice so far.
ABC
this year,
Family but. Always had it on.
Yeah.
Or whatever it's now called. Freeform.
But there were, yeah, Freeform. There were a lot of goofs in this movie as well, which is kind of weird for an animated movie. We've seen that in the past, though. But one of the major ones, which is weird, is the number of cars on this train constantly is changing.
Oh, yeah, I noticed, especially at the lake.
Yeah, at that point, there's 20 cars on the train.
And the woods, too. There's like four.
Right. At the end of the movie, like when they're in the North Pole, there's only five total. But at one point, there's 20 cars on the train. So I don't know how, you know, if... I don't know how that something like that happens, but
I don't know. Well, maybe it's like Garfield. Maybe the amateur animators come in for the weekend
and just add cars to it. Like someone's physically drawing them, and then the next time they're not drawing them.
These type of movies always made me wonder, like how, you know, I don't know. I would love to just sit down and watch this stuff being made in real time to see, like, how do you tell, you know, make the character move over here. Are you literally clicking the mouse and, like, do you already have a program to be able to walk? Or do you have to move every little piece yourself? One thing I liked, and it's weird, when you hear just the audio without seeing it, seemed like when he eventually, the conductor asks for the tickets, and he starts punching the hole as he asks for it, it seems like it never ends. It gives me that, it's weird that I even mentioned it earlier, it gives me that Willem Dafoe feeling from, whatchamacallit, Boondock Saints with the
quiver lip.
Tickets, please. Tickets.
But, so yeah, he's punching some tickets, putting some letters in there. All
well,
that good
yeah,
stuff.
That's the thing. You don't really understand what he's doing. Like, he's just punching a bunch of random holes.
Well, they show you the letters. Well, L-E, what's that supposed to mean?
Yeah, but you don't understand what it's what it means until the very end of the movie.
No, but so moving on, I want to know if you know, and I think you and I mentioned this one other podcast, but I want to see if you know what it was or whatever. When they're finally going to pick up that other kid, and again, the crazy annoying kid, he says this.
We're heading for the other side of the tracks.
Now, do you know what that means?
Yeah, it's like a meaning like, you know, you come from the wrong side of the tracks where it's like run down, crappy, poor.
Yeah, the poor side, yeah. And I didn't know that. I had to look that up, not this time, but last year I remember looking up the other side of the tracks because I didn't know. Did they literally mean the other side? I mean, they did. They, you know, they're crossing something, but they literally means, I think, usually like you have a town like where the train would run through. And the town all the way, you know, to the right of the tracks is, you know, pretty much where you get off and walk. But I guess if you're getting off and you wait for the train to pass and then you hop over the tracks to go home, I guess you're not doing as well as others. There's a couple odd things in this, within all this as well. I mean, the, you know, the kid pulls the brick. I forgot why he pulled the brick. Oh, to pick up that kid. Which, by the way, the more I look at it, that kid is your son, Max.
Oh, yeah. He has big ears. I know.
Sure does. But yeah, he pulls the brake, gets, oh, and that's the that's the reason why I kept this audio clip. I was wondering why I even had it. So he pulls the brake, it stops, and then the conductor comes flying on in.
Who in the blazes applied that emergency brake?
He did.
You.
Now, I remember that scene because years ago, my mother-in-law was telling me that she went to go see that movie with her grandson, who at the time was only like, I don't know, it's 13 years. So, you know, he was probably, it was sometime later. It was maybe, I don't know, he was like four or five, and he loved trains, so they thought this would be a great movie to see. And he was already nervous with the conductor the way he was acting. But that scene when he yelled at Chris, he just started bawling his eyes out, and she had to leave the theater.
The mean conductor man yelled.
Yep. So I remember her telling me that she had to leave because he was crying because he thought the conductor was being too mean to the kids.
See, like, some of the way, like, I just picture, like, his dead stare just yelling. Like, there's just the way, like, that animation was some, I mean, it was still very good, but, like, you could tell there was just something flat and off about it. Mm. Like, it would be like watching an old PlayStation video game, just looking at the way someone's face looks.
They lift up their hands and it's just squares for fists.
Like, it's, I don't know, it's just, I guess they just look like they have dead eyes.
Yeah.
That's what it is to me. Like, there's no soul in there.
Like some of the creepy dolls. I think one of the most pointless, I mean, I get, they wanted to entertain, it's for kids, but that hot chocolate song goes right through me.
You didn't like it?
No, I'm not a fan. I'm drinking hot chocolate right now in honor of the movie, but definitely not this song. Not my thing.
So what do you think they broke into that for? Like they're treating the kids like royalty though. You know what I mean? They're letting them do what they want. They get hot chocolate. They're really
well, because it shuts them all up. Did you notice they all pass out after it?
True.
It was spiked.
And the funny thing is, like, they're just throwing up tables that are disappearing. Like, I don't know.
And the waiters all look the same.
Yeah, I thought it was a good sequence.
I don't know. I mean, it's the animation was good in that respect, but it was just. It was an oddball song. I don't know.
But every time I make it for the kids, I always just go, who wants some hot chocolate?
Never, ever let it cool.
But then at one point, what are they just like spurting milk in all of them?
Yeah, like, no. It's the actual hot chocolate itself. It's like a percolator, and they go to squirt, and you just see a big drop go flying through the air and hit the cup, and it fills the cup up.
I don't know. I thought it was funny.
The girl ends up, you know, you would think though, because of the way they are, like they know what they're doing. Like they put the hot chocolate everywhere it needs to be. Like it's one of those things where it's like it's a fine oiled machine. They don't mess up. So yeah. When that girl hid the one under her seat, and they made it look like she didn't get one, and then they quick danced around her and then gave her a fresh one. You would think they would have questioned it.
Yeah, it's like one of those times, like. Actually, usually around this time of the year, you see them commercials on TV with cars and they're all doing fancy driving techniques and they're not crashing into each other.
Yeah.
It's similar to something like that.
Oh.
But, yeah, I forgot. She hit a cup and you didn't know why at first. And then after the scene's over, she takes it out to the other side of the track boy.
For Max in the back car that never came up.
Now, there's a few things I hated about that. Like when they look out the door, like, I don't know, there was just like... Why are they letting kids cross around out there?
Well, again, I guess it comes to the whole thing where most people would say it's a movie, we got to let it go. Amongst everything else, especially when he climbs up on top of the train. I mean, that's a whole other...
That's the worst.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But I love, though, and it's just because this is literally where... Think about it. Did you ever want to see a movie where it's like... All right, so we're up to this point now with the Coco. Imagine if it just completely turns into something that like horrific. I mean, wouldn't that be weird to watch a movie where everything's great? And like, I don't know if there's any movies out there where it literally, you go in expecting, all right, this is going to be a nice wholesome movie. And then it just completely turns to shit for the cast. And this is
going for a while. And then all of a sudden.
Yeah. And this is one of those things where I'm like, man, if they really wanted to, there's a lot of potential here.
He's gonna throw her off the train. Yeah, he's gonna probably throw her right off the rear platform.
So, like when the conductor takes her back, I mean, that would just be that'd be funny if they went that route. So he goes to try to save her and everything, because she doesn't have a ticket. That's what it was, is that she couldn't find her ticket. It was blown away. And probably the longest like segment ever is that ticket floating through the woods, though I do enjoy that part in a way. So he ends up taking her where you don't know yet. You just think that he's going to throw her off the side of the track or off the back of the cart. So the Hero Boy Chris goes to look for and ends up climbing out of the caboose and going up onto the train cars.
Yep. And then he sees a light, like it looks like the lantern flickering in the distance. So he's following that.
Following that, we slowly hear this very beautiful instrument. So this is where we get introduced to the hobo who is singing Good King Wenzel. Do you know what the name of that instrument's called?
I can't think of it right now. I know it when you say it.
Hurdy-gurdy.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah, Never mind.
It's a hurdy-gurdy. So it's the equivalent of like a piano keys that you play on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Or like nubs to hold the strings down. But all you're doing is there's four strings, just like a violin. And there's a wheel with rosin on it, and as you're turning it, the wheel is scraping all of those strings at the same time, and then you're just hitting the certain notes with the other hand up and down. So you're constantly cranking, and then you're playing the notes left and right. So it's almost, it has that bagpipe-type sound where you're always playing a constant chord coming out of the pipes. But, it's a hurdy-gurdy. I'd love to have one, but they're a lot of money.
Huh. It sounds like something that's just homemade.
Well, there's a lot of people that make that. Yeah, they said it's not too bad. I would have no idea where to start with doing that. But yeah, so this is where we get to the hobo, which, again, one of the theories is that the hobo is actually the boy who he decided to, at that moment, again, if we want to talk about time travel, he never climbed on board of the train, and he ended up turning into this hobo now who doesn't believe or anything. And there's a lot of stuff with this, and especially in a lot of the stuff that he says. So I'm going to play something. It's 14 seconds long. Hopefully you'll hear it well enough, but it's the hobo talking. So listen here about, he'll end it with King of the North Pole.
I own this train. It's like I'm the king of this train. Yeah, the king of the Polex. In fact, I am the king of the North Pole.
All right. So I thought I got a little bit of audio before that on there, but he mentions about how he rides for free. I own this train. Yeah. And
definitely has a big black jaw.
Yeah, he does. Like, he's definitely got a wad of chew in there.
He's drinking coffee, yeah, sock coffee.
With all sock lint and pilts on them or whatever it's called. That coffee looks good though, I have to admit, until the sock comes out.
Yeah, that's rough.
But here's another reason. Now, this part wasn't mentioned, but when I saw about the hobo being
him in the future,
this part makes sense as well, is when he asks him about Santa.
What about Santa?
Santa?
Isn't he the king of the North Pole?
You mean this guy?
So right there, with that extended laugh, he threw a Santa hat on, and then we didn't get into detail, but when they passed Herpesheimer's in the train, again, he's looking at Santa, and it's almost like, oh yeah, I see that he's fake. It purposely zooms in on this robotic Santa with a big wind-up thing in his back, moving, mm-hmm. and in this case, the hobo is doing the same exact movements of a robotic-looking Santa picking up a box and moving it over, and he's doing the same exact animation as the Santa did from Herpesheimer's. Now, you could either argue and say, well, he was on top of the train the whole time, so he passed Herpesheimer's along with them, My thing is, based on this theory, I'm going to say that if this is the boy, then that's what the boy kind of remembers last as a fake Santa, is the Herpesheimer. So that's, you know, he's kind of throwing that at him because the boy lived that. So if that is the boy, that's why he knows that motion that Santa did. I don't know if you looked into it that much or not, but
I did. I'm going to have to look into this theory of that being the alternate reality version of that, of the hero boy. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look into that more. It's interesting.
Because again, it's Tom Hanks's voice and it looks just like the conductor and it looks like his father.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that more. Now, that store, that name that you just said, what was it again?
I wrote it down as Herpesheimer's.
Okay. The guy that wrote the story, that was an actual store in his town that he grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I believe the address that the conductor says at the beginning of the movie, that's actually the address of the house that he grew up in.
Yeah. I guess so I would pay homage to stuff.
Yeah.
If I was writing my own stuff and was getting out there.
Yep. But that's where those things are from. They're real life to him.
Well, so he's there on the train, on top of this train, talking to this guy, which, again, it's very, you know, it's very quiet talking. It's not even talking over the wind. It's almost like the wind is gone now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're talking and everything. And he mentions about looking for the girl, and the hobo ends up getting up and walking away. And turns around, and then probably my favorite music, which we played for you for at the beginning, right as the intro came in, which is called Seeing is Believing, and it just has such a very nice, gothic, you know, very haunting type sound to it, and I love it.
Seeing is believing. Am I right?
Well, what about this tree?
What about it?
We're all really going to the North Pole. Aren't we?
Aren't we?
Are you saying that this is all just a dream?
You said it, kid! Not me.
And you do have to realize, too, I mean, we see the hobo disappear twice. Mm-hmm. Once when he runs in, when the train hits the tunnel, he turns into snow. And then at the very end when he waves and he turns into snow as well. So adding to this theory is that that's the hero boy, but he's also dead. He's a ghost now. And that all makes a hell of a lot of sense with the very next thing where he says, let's go find that girl. And he picks up the stuff, walks away, stops, and then turns around.
One other thing.
Hero boy shakes his head no.
Interesting.
So right there, do you believe in ghosts? The hero boy shakes his head no, and then he says, interesting. It's almost like one of those things, he's calling him out on it without calling him out. Like, you're talking to a ghost right now, and you're telling him you don't believe in them.
Yeah, I don't think I ever really paid too much attention to that.
Yeah, I got very fascinated because I had some questions, and then when I last year or a year or two ago when I first looked these up and didn't realize that there's a heck of a lot of people out there wondering the same things about this movie.
Now, the guy that wrote it's still alive. Why can't he just be questioned or interviewed?
I don't know. I don't even know if I didn't look into that stuff if he was or not. I don't know. Maybe the Holiday Bros should write him a letter. Just to say, you know, ask him to review our podcast and see if he'll give us some answers.
A few things we need to know about.
Yeah. A good old holiday review.
As they're going through the train, though, to find the girl, she ends up being up in the front. The engine room, the boiler room, whatever.
Yeah, well, same thing. Yeah, the engine room right there.
But those two guys that were up there, you remember those two guys?
Yeah. Yep.
They in the movie their names are Smokey and Steamer. That's what they're listed as. But in the scene where they're up in there, where they're trying to catch that pin, like when that pin flies out, for a split second in that one room, you could see a flux capacitor. If you look,
I think that's reading that somewhere.
That's from Back to the Future, which Robert Zemeckis did.
Now, where you said before, unless you didn't get. You said there were some not glitches, but like errors or something within this movie. Like,
yeah.
Did we already hit? Would one example have already made itself known by this point or not?
Well, one example was the amount of cars in the train.
Oh yeah, you did mention that part.
Yeah. There's a bunch of continuity issues in there. There's a few different things. Like I'll give you another thing. So when the characters are ringing the bell, they hold it by the bell instead of the ribbons, and they hear it ring.
Oh yeah, well yeah, that's something that bothered me the whole
impossible.
Time.
Yeah, that's impossible. Hero Boy, he jumps into the car with the coal and then gets out of it, and there's not any dirt or stains or anything on him. Like, he comes out clean, but he jumps into coal. That one's kind of a weird. Yeah. That really nothing really too big, but continuity thing. So, like when the boy goes downstairs on Christmas Eve, there's a red snowman skirt under the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end of the movie, when he goes down and the train's going around it, the tree skirt it's like a yellow color to it, and it has bells on it. It's not even the same tree skirt. Just like little things like that.
Yeah, but could he have still been in his dream? Because one thing that we didn't talk about, and I think it's a key moment because it purposely zooms in at the beginning and at the end, is when he rips the hole in his robe, when he rips it off his bed.
Yeah.
And the marbles come out, which I need a... I'm assuming... I don't know how you look at it. It wouldn't make any other sense any other way. I'm assuming he ripped the initial rip at the beginning was the first hole. And then when he ripped again, or when it ripped at the end, was it ripping the already hole bigger there? Or what did he then rip it? Because... Like, the first time it ripped it, that would have been the dream scenario if this was a dream. That's why it's very confusing to me, especially with that rip, because that rip has an impact later on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I never really thought about it. I know it did rip twice like that, which was weird. But
again, one we know is reality because it was Christmas Day, but the other one could have been the dream, at the beginning. So the one that he ripped in reality was either just making the original hole bigger or ripping the hole itself, but all the balls and marbles fell out again. Why would they have been back in his pocket then, too?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, but yeah, I'm not a big fan of the whole, the engine guy's part, and that guy kind of, I guess, fades into the lake at that point. but especially the damn howling.
Yeah.
However, though, there's a very good moment coming up. When the train speeds away and they're, like, flying really fast, they kind of buckle themselves to the front of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I like to do, and I did it with Bridget last year and she liked it. I held her up, but you have a big TV. Just go and stand. I mean, mine's high in the air, so I could stand and it's perfect. But I will stand very close to the TV and I will seriously lose my stomach on some of those drops. Like, I feel like I'm actually riding it. It's a pretty cool feeling.
I'm going to have to try that. Never thought about doing that before.
Yeah, it was fun.
Like those, like, 3D roller coasters where you wear the helmet and you just you're on the ride.
Yep, I try to block the stuff out from my side and just keep that in my view. And a couple times it worked. I lost my stomach. It was pretty cool.
It's the best. It's the poor man's virtual reality. I know.
I can't afford Pulse or V or whatever it's called. I don't know what they call it.
An Oculus Rift. How about that?
Well, that's one of them. Yeah, that'll.
That's the other one.
But here's the thing, though. They when they're talking to the conductor, then, I'm skipping now past the whole ice and everything. That's another thing, is that people, their inconsistency is, if they really hit ice, how is that train even? How'd they get away from the ice? You know.
Yeah, it's all over the place when it hits that ice.
But see, even the annoying kid counters all that later on. He's like, hey, you guys missed it. You know, it looked like that, we're on a frozen lake, but that's impossible. It must have been an illusion from the moon and the everything. Like it was that part said for, on purpose, to trick us, or was that just because he's a know-it-all kid? I mean.
I think he's a know-it-all. I think that really happened.
All right. Well, they do talk to the conductor, and he even mentions about being saved.
Years ago, on my first Christmas Eve run, I was up on the roof making my rounds, but I slipped on the ice myself. I reached out for a hand iron, but it broke off. I slid and fell. And yet, I did not fall off this train.
Someone saved you?
Or something.
So even at that point, you have to think, you know, was it the ghost that saved him? You know, or the hobo, I should say, in that case.
Yeah.
And I think that's trying to, I think that's what they want you to try to question with this. But they climb the mountain, and this is, you know, a little bit before they get to the North Pole. So many people knock this song that they just hear that little boy. They hear Max out there singing
yeah.
on the end of the caboose. And again, they all flip out. They're like, why are they outside in the train in their pajamas? But I guess some things you get hit to just, you know, let go.
All the things I've heard about but never really seen.
Poor Max.
Carrie hates when kids sing, but that's the thing. Like, you know, you really feel for that kid because, like, the whole movie up to this point, like, he doesn't even talk or anything. And then all of a sudden he's pelting out some tunes. And then the girl's out there with him. And I always hated, like, when she looks at him and gives, like, that all-knowing nods when she's singing. I always hated that.
Well, and again, his thing is that he's a poor kid. Like, his was the only ticket that changed, you know, three different times as he's flipping it with, you know, count on, rely on, something.
I mean, that's the thing that stinks for that kid. Like, since his family was so poor, they were never able to give him a Christmas. So, like, he always just grew up wondering why Santa hated him.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the whole point of that song as well, is that, you know, just in that clip that I played, or that audio clip that I played, is about all the things that he's heard about Christmas, but he's never really seen.
Yeah.
You know, before, about all these kids getting gifts. What?
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So they eventually get to the North Pole. And
what do you think about that turnstile area when they get in there?
Well, that, I mean, it's weird. I don't know why it's just a complete drop off cliff, like, to either hell or nothing. But
if something goes wrong.
I know. I mean, it is odd. And I think my OCD kicked in when the train wouldn't evenly line up with
the other side
of the tracks.
That went right through me. As soon as I saw that, I got cringe. I got all cringy.
Yeah, I'm like, oh god. I mean, it makes sense because the end only has a bumper on it. It's not. I mean, but you just can't go anywhere in that direction. That's all.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's just. I think the creepiest part is just the music. It's. And I think these are real songs too.
Yeah, they are. But the reason that that one sounds like that is just because it's echoing so loud through all the tunnels and hallways and stuff. That's
no, I know, but I mean, it's just such a weird, like,
it's a weird choice on their end. Normally, when you hear holiday music, it's just in the foreground. You know what I mean? Like, this one's just it's a main thing in the movie.
What the elves are listening to is they're working, but
it's eerily quiet just when with everything else except for that, which. Just
well,
adds
and I guess they didn't want to be mainstream with stuff. Like, they had, you know, a very, whatever his name is, that writes the, he did all the music. I have the name right here. Where is it? Alan Silvestri, who wrote the music for this movie. I'm assuming, you know, they don't want to be too mainstream. Like, think about it. How, you know, well, you admitted last time how much you are into Hallmark movies.
Mm-hmm.
With Hallmark movies and even a lot of Christmas specials you might see on regular cable, I would say the most played song would probably be Deck the Halls. Like, that's how a lot of them just kind of start, you know, when you really think about it, like, that's usually the tune that you'll hear, just a nice little upbeat, like, you know, muted trumpet or something, just like,
like even like A Christmas Story.
Oh yeah. That one starts. Yeah. Same thing. So, I mean, that's, I think, one of the most widely used ones, and that gives you a nice upbeat feeling. This is just, I don't know, it just gives you a weird feeling with some of the music here. But they're, so...
Try to think of a different Christmas song that would give you that same feeling. Like, that one's perfect for it, because just picture if, like, a movie started and all you heard was like, doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot. Like, it just doesn't work. It just, like, that one just kicks into the Christmas feeling.
Jingle Bells could actually work in some, But Deck the Halls is all major. There's no minor chords in Deck the Halls, which is one. It's gives you that happy feeling. I mean, Jingle Bells doesn't even have a minor in it either. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and no matter how it's played, Deck the Halls, I mean, it's just, you know, it is pretty good. Yeah, it would be hard. I mean, well, a lot of them also do play Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies, but that's usually like a woman in her Uggs and tights and opening up her jewelry store, and then a guy randomly walks in and they hate each other because they can't come to a good deal, and then they end up falling in love at the end. So the reason now they're even in this turnstile is because they go, Max didn't want to get off the, and the, by the way, Max is actually named Billy, but Max didn't want to get off the car to go visit Santa. He was, I guess, nervous, so they went back on to get him, and Hero Boy stepped on the release, which released the back end car. And they went flying through the town and ended up getting into this turnstile. What?
They went flying, too.
Well, they did. And this is another instance where we see the hobo, where they're looking to see. And then, you know, the hobo, he's sitting on top of the car and he taps with his little metal tin of coffee. He taps the wheel in the back, which is the brake. And, you know, he goes and he spins it. But again, that's where I think the hobo, they go through the tunnel and the hobo just hits it and turns into snow. So now they're trying to get back to the main square. I'll just call it the square. Trying to get back to where Santa is, but they don't know where they're going. So they start rummaging around and trying to get through this place. And they realize this is like kind of the factory is where the elves are. And mm-hmm. how they're getting back is the girl and Billy, they could hear Santa's bells ringing, but Chris, Hero Boy, cannot, because they keep saying, oh, I could hear the bells, you know, I could hear it this way, this is the way to go, I could. And Billy's like, yeah, I hear it too. And Hero Boy's like, I don't hear anything,
just so, frustrating to him because yeah. he doesn't hear.
So and they finally get to one of the last scenes where or last places where they see some elves doing some last minute naughty and nice listing, and that's where we got that whole kid about putting gum in his sister's hair. So the elves are going to give him a break because it's just about Christmas time, and they're going to put him on the nice list for that year. But they see these elves then wrap up, and then the four of them get into this gold car that just takes off through a tunnel extremely fast, and then right behind it another one comes up and opens up, and they decide that's how they're going to get to Santa.
How do you feel about their portrayal of the North Pole? Didn't really seem North Pole-y to me.
No, I mean, it's from the train aspect. You saw the Aurora Borealis. Mm-hmm. You saw it almost made me feel like they were about to enter Oz. but yeah, it's well, he even says I think it's an island, but it's a very small looking island actually. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I didn't get it. I picture snowy mountains and stuff. Like,
yeah. So it's not the way that normally the North Pole is portrayed.
No, but what the hell's normal about this movie anyway when you think about it?
True.
So the kids, they finally are able to escape, but they end up getting into Santa's bag. the reason is because Billy saw there's a gift that was addressed to him. So he latched onto it and would not let go of this damn gift. He just kind of followed it through the friggin' riding the conveyor belt, which ended up dropping it into Santa's bag, and then ended up the annoying kid was in that bag with them.
It has such a Toy Story 3 feeling to me.
Farewell, my friend. I go on to a better place. Though that was the first one.
Yeah, I'm talking like, well, besides the luggage thing that they were flying through, that was on 2, but on 3 when they're in the dumpster fire, like just in that bit.
Yeah. So it ends up, they're in Santa's bag, and the bag, the way the bag closes, like the huge drawstrings are on the ground, which mm-hmm. are attached to rockets, and the rockets fire up and then get attached to something, and then this little blimp, I guess, floats them over to the sled. Now, how they hit the star and they kept saying, we don't think it's going to make it? Is that mm-hmm. because of the extra weight of those four kids in there?
Yeah, I think so, because it's all coordinated that it
like,
wouldn't.
Do you think everything is purely precise in an exact science, so that little bit of extra weight completely threw everything off?
Yeah, I think so. Now, when they jumped in it, did it kind of like throw it off a little bit? No, because it was on the ground.
Yeah, I don't think it did anything.
Yeah, maybe I would just say they didn't accumulate or get ready or prepare for that extra weight.
Well, the gifts get dropped onto the sled, and then they kind of, two elves open up the bag and sees them all in there, and they get them out, or they're trying to, so they all slide down the bag. But before that happens,
the creepiest elf in the whole world.
What?
The creepiest elf in the
whole
world.
I know, and that's exactly what I have written here, because this elf is just ridiculous. Listen to it, because the kid wouldn't like
shit.
Yeah, the kid wouldn't let go of the package. And besides just looking creepy, listen to him. He sounds like a gremlin.
I know.
I'll take care of this.
It sounds intimidating.
Trust me.
Who would trust him? It's in good. He was like Harry from Home Alone. It's in good hands.
Yeah, that's a rough elf. Well, I shouldn't say he's the scariest elf. The scariest looking elf you kind of see at the end of the movie, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Rocking on top of the world.
Yep.
Do you think all the elves in there too, like, do you think everybody in there was a face from somebody, or do you think eventually, like, because there's a lot of elf faces in there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I never really thought about that.
I wonder if, like, all the, but everybody in the credits could definitely have filled in all those elf positions. So,
that elf creeped me out, though.
Yeah, no, it was definitely,
especially when he says that. Like, I remember the first time I saw this movie, I didn't see it from the beginning. It was on TV. Aiden was watching it, and I happened to just every once in a while I would poke through and see it. But then at that one point I saw that, and I was like, "What the hell is this?" That was the part that threw me. Where you saw the slow mo of the bell thing, and flying. I saw that creepy elf, and I was like, "What is going on?" I said, "Why does he look like that and sound like that?" It just scared me.
Well, they finally get all the kids out, and they all slide down. The conductor's like, give them a little what for a second. And keeps looking at the clock, and it's still 5 to midnight. And, even the annoying kid, it was just 5 to midnight 15 minutes ago. Hey, is that clock broken? So it's always 5 to midnight. And so the elves then come out. They have all of the bells on the reindeer, Santa's bells, and they attach them on there. And everybody, because now you're kind of in the eyes of the hero boy, everybody could hear the bells except the hero boy and us as the audience at this point.
How did you like that for
Aren't those bells the most beautiful sound?
What?
How did you like that point of view where he's like trying to poke through the crowd? Like that just gives me like,
that gives me the worst feeling. That happens to me in dreams all the time.
Yeah. I don't know, something like it makes my skin itch thinking like there's something there that you're trying to see and you just can't see it.
No. And you could see a little glimpse here or there, but everyone else, they all say that, they could see it and everything, see him, but he can't. And that happens to me in dreams so many times. Like, not just seeing something, but trying to do something everybody else is doing. If I'm getting chased and, like, I'm running with people and they all take off into the sky, and then I'll go to try to jump and fly with them and I can't. And then whatever's chasing me gets me, but then I wake up.
Now, what do you think, though, about the way that Santa looked? Like, at that part where you can't really see him, I thought he looked like, I thought that version, like, you know how you can't see his face, but you just see him moving around?
What was that you said?
I thought it looked so bad. Like, to me, it looked like one of those wacky noodle inflatable noodle arm guys.
Yeah.
Just, like, twist. Like, it just looked very tube.
Or, like, tubular. Some of those things you see on e-bombs, like the creepy pictures of, Santa and other things from back in the day.
Yeah.
And just something that, yeah. No, I totally get what you mean. But one thing that gives me a good feeling is that, and imagine, like, it's weird. It's, I guess this is the first, not first, I was gonna say it's the first fatherly thing I've done. But it's just, I picture, like, I always said this would be a great movie to have if you could have the ability. But I always said it has to come down to you have to have magical abilities because it would be impossible to do anything other. But this would be one of those things where, you know how, like, back in the day you would take, like, kids to Christmas shows or anything like that? Like, this would be one of those things that if they've done it live, mm-hmm. I think it would be, like, especially this whole ending scene is really what I'm talking about. Maybe, if you could get a bunch of people on the train, take them to I picture a huge arena, and I just picture when they're singing, like, that's such a great thing. Like, everyone's waiting for Santa, and the only way for that to happen now, for him to come out, is for all the kids and everybody to sing Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah,
and
that would be great. I would love that.
Yeah, just you're in a huge arena. Just, you know, picture, you know, where you go to watch a concert or hockey or anything, just filled, like 10,000 people. And, you know, somebody's up on stage, you know, the fluffer or whatever. Yeah, the person getting everybody excited. And
yeah, the
like,
hype.
What?
The hype man.
Yeah, yeah. And then they just, you know, they're like, he won't come until you start singing. And then just, you know, everybody finally starts. All the adults are singing, getting into it.
It has a very elf ending to elf feel to it as well. Now that Hero Boy gets inside of his head.
And then Santa comes on out, and then the whole audience goes. And it would be one of those things where you have to bring a gift, and then it would obviously come back to your kid.
Yeah. No, say that. When we used to go to that one in Hazleton when we were little, those gifts were given to you.
What were?
You didn't have to bring them. Remember when we would go see Santa at the Borough Building?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
You got those gifts. That wasn't anything.
Yeah, well, all right. Well, that was back when everyone was nice. I mean, we're in 2017 now.
Yeah, I know.
Let's be realistic about this. So, but I mean, not even that, but even as far as getting Santa out of there, that's where I'm saying you would need some really good techniques to get him to actually fly a sled and get off that stage.
Do you remember the I know you didn't like the movie Elf, but do you remember the ending of it when they have to get everybody in the city singing a Christmas song just so he could get his sleigh fueled? And
vaguely, I watched it once.
The dad's just lipping it, and he's not really singing it, and the kid calls out on it, and then as soon as he says the words, all of a sudden the meter goes up, and then the sleigh takes off. It has that feeling to it.
But yeah, I always picture like just holding Bridget and doing that whole thing, and I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be a good scene to reenact and have it, you know, have it actually happen like that. I would love it.
Yeah.
He's making a list. Yeah. Checking it twice. Yeah. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus.
Yeah, you can't see him. That's a heartbreaker as well.
Yeah,
but there's a reason for that. I mean, it's still like it, I guess that still comes back to the whole you don't believe, then you're not going to see me,
right? Especially because at that point he's still not hearing anything.
Yeah, he still doesn't hear the bells either,
and they're all over the place too. Like they're really making it known that like you see the reindeer bouncing and jumping, and you see the bells on the reins just flopping around.
Well,
but
even
he's
when
not...
yeah, I mean when they bring them out originally, they're all the elves are carrying them, and you hear the drums like doom doom doom, and then they shake. They shake the bells and everyone starts cheering, and as the audience at that time, you don't hear it.
But you know all the kids do.
Yeah, everybody else does, even the elves. But that's the thing. That's what it made me question, like, why is he... But again, it all came to me, you know, near the beginning when I mentioned that it's not about just believing in Santa. Everybody's on that train for a different life lesson. His is just believing and trying to keep that magic going. So at this point then, you know, they're all he sees him and everything, all this stuff. Well, he doesn't see him yet, but everybody else does. That's when that slow-mo music, I won't play the whole thing. You know, the bell flies off and he just sees, it just gives us such a dingy tinny sound. Oh
yeah. And this is the moment where he makes the decision. Do you believe or do you not believe?
Yep. And he picks up the bell, and again, we'll ignore that he's holding the actual metal that would vibrate.
Yeah.
But he picks it up.
I believe.
So he's sitting there saying, I believe. But here's the thing. He's still not sure of himself. Because
he's questioning it.
This is when... So he's sitting there and he's trying to ring it and trying to ring it. And then you finally, for the first time, especially as the audience, you hear it.
I just thought of something funny. Picture if the whole time he's sitting there going, I believe, and he's shaking it and it's not ringing, and then someone comes up and goes, I know you believe, you dummy, and he just says, you're holding the bell wrong, and holds it by the ribbon and shakes it, and he can hear it. That'd be the best if it was Santa that came up. That's how he just goes, I know you believe you don't.
Well, it's just, it's weird the way that they've done. And again, it has to be done on purpose. When you first see Santa, he walks up behind him, but you're seeing the close-up of the bell. Mm-hmm. And the hole in that bell is where Santa's face is.
Yeah.
And then he turns it, and then you can see Santa's reflection. And then he looks up, and there's Santa. Now, I don't know if it was probably just because of the way the city is. You have the city lights, and then you have the moonlight. But if you ever notice that whole scene, the one side of Santa is blue, the other side is gold. Just the light that's hitting him. I don't think it's anything to look into, but he definitely has two different hues to him. But yeah, Santa comes up and looks down and pretty much says,
"What was that you said?"
And did he ever look at Santa's eyes when he says that? He gives him a 1-2. He goes like, I know you probably can't see me that well on the camera, but he's like, "What was that you said?" You know.
Yeah.
So that's where, again, this, like, the kid's still not sure. He goes, "I believe," and then he pauses and says, "That this is yours." So he's trying to turn it into, you know, I believe this is yours. And Santa's like, "Oh, thank you." And right at that point, then the annoying kid chimes in.
Pick me. I want the first gift.
Young man, patience.
You shut that pie
and
hole.
A smidgen of humility might also serve you well.
I'll tell you, if Tom Hanks came up to me and goes, "Young man," I'd probably shut the hell up right away.
Oh, yeah. Very commanding.
It is. I like it. Is that. But then he, you know, he goes through the kids. He goes to the girl and, you know, talks about her being a good, you know, leader and whatnot. And talks to Billy about making some new friends. And talks about, you know, that's the biggest, best gift of all. And that's when he goes, "And speaking of gifts."
"And speaking of gifts." "Let's have this young fellow right here."
I hate the face he makes when he turns to the side. I don't like it.
I know we said it before, but Tom Hanks' voice, you know, even if he tries to disguise it, there's always something that he does that just brings out the Hanks voice.
Oh, yeah.
there's no way around it, like, you know, that he could hide it. At least one word that he says or something is just in the regular Tom Hanks voice.
"Out like a light. The express train wouldn't wake him now." You know what? When Santa first comes out, just going back a little bit, one thing that just threw me off completely is the first time when I saw this movie and the conductor takes his hat off and he's completely bald on top.
Oh, yeah, I know. That was very weird.
That just doesn't fit.
No, it's off-putting. You didn't expect that to be under there.
No, not at all. So now this part, it's 25 seconds long, so we're going to listen to it. And you'll know what's going on. And I want to know if you know exactly what is being said here. And again, probably the best time. This music is played throughout the movie, but this is probably one of the best parts of it when it's played. Gives me such an Edward Scissorhands feel.
"Now, what would you like for Christmas?"
"Me."
"You."
Now, with that, do you know what he asks for? He says it, and my God, did I have to turn the volume up, not just on the TV. I had to put it through my computer, blast the decibels, and then sit in between my two monitors, and you could actually finally hear, for the most of the words, what he says in there. Like a regular TV, even with my sound system, I cannot hear it clearly. I had to use my audio stuff here.
I remember a couple of years ago I looked it up and I did read what he had said, but I don't think I was ever able to hear it.
Yeah, I don't know why I never just... No, I did look it up. I used to look it up and people kept saying different things. They never gave an exact quote. But all I could get out of it is, and it obviously makes sense, there, I think there's a little bit of muffledness before and after, because I do mm-hmm. have my, as I have it typed up here, I have the words trailing off, but you can hear, I would like the bell of the reindeer, and then one or two other things that kind of get muffled. So, makes complete sense, because, as we know, the first gift of Christmas. And now this is where it comes back to this 5-2. So, this tells you, all right, so we're in this world now where, I mean, if we want to look at the train, the Polar Express, it has to all do with Santa going to the North Pole. Now we're on Santa's time. And even though the conductor had that damn watch that always said could possibly be late, running late, it's always 5-2. Until, that is, as soon as Santa gives the first gift, he would only ever give the first gift when it's Christmas. And it doesn't turn Christmas until Santa gives the first gift. So one can't work without the other. And that's right. Why when he finally gives the gift...
Christmas.
Which I don't think I look, but literally as soon as the bell is placed in his hand, the first gift was given, then the clock strikes midnight and it's Christmas morning now.
While we were just listening to that, which that sound is my ringtone on my iPad, so every time I get a message it does that bell sound. I looked up exactly what the boy says. So on the official, well, I don't know if it's official because anyone could edit a Wikipedia, but on Polar Express Wikipedia, it says that the boy asks for one bell from one of the reindeer's harnesses.
All right. Well, then I'll have to listen to that more closely for those exact words. So what are we saying? One bell
from one of the reindeer's harnesses.
From one of the reindeer's harnesses. Okay. All right, well, I was somewhat close.
Yeah, I mean, that. You got some words in there, so it must be right.
Renderers? No, reindeer. I guess it doesn't matter. I know where the...
So, after that part happens, then does it just go right into the big party?
No, because he has to take off first.
Oh, that's true. No, I'm talking about the party with the reindeer, or with the creepy elf. But yeah, that's right. Santa does take off.
Yeah, so, and that... is wait a second, do I have literally, yeah. I was wondering why it's a minute 25. I'm not gonna play the whole thing. I'll put that on in post, but again, I keep forgetting you're all listening to it now, so you already hear it. One of the best feelings I have with this, and it always gives me goosebumps, so he's there flying around now trying to take off. You hear that music come, like, It's that ridiculous music. I'll just, you know, and then... what is that? Jingle Bells, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's doing so it's playing Jingle Bells, but then all of a sudden it rolls into Jolly Old St. Nicholas with the... And, you know, so he's doing all of his thing, and then the whole Believe music comes in. I'll play the last 15 seconds here, but it always gave me goosebumps when he does, what is it, at the end of the Nightmare of Twas the Night Before Christmas, where to the top of the roof, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he says for him to finally friggin' take off and disappear as fast as light, you know, into the air. I don't know why, it always gave me goosebumps just watching that part, especially when the music's turned up really loud. It even gave me chills right there, too.
I like that they threw it in there, because it's very official, like from the actual, mm-hmm. you know, the story of it. That's why I enjoy that part.
Yeah. So
do you think he does that every time he takes off from a house? He has to. I mean, if you go by the story of a Christmas or the Night Before Christmas, he would have to. At every house, he has to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the arthritis has just kicked in on the reindeer. We need a boost for a right away. But you know, you figure then at that point, if Santa was real, I mean, and he can control time like that, God, if he had to hit every single house, I wonder how slow time would tick for that. But if he's also traveling that fast, who knows?
Yeah, no, it would be ridiculous.
So that was a nice thing, and then all, you know, he disappears, and like all these sparkles kind of rain down. It's all quiet, and then all of a sudden, all the elves cheer for a bit, and that's when I didn't even pull the audio because I hate the part where you have an Aerosmith elf rocking on top of the world.
He looked exactly like Steven Tyler.
Yeah, well, they definitely had to have taken his stuff and done that, but it looked like I was playing Revolution X again.
Revolution X, music is the weapon.
Yeah, that elf is, I don't know which one's scarier, that one or the one trust me.
It had to be that. Yeah, it had to be that one.
Trust me.
Before we wrap it up, there was one other part that I forgot to mention, and it kind of ties in with something else that he was doing. Remember when they were walking through the train, and there's that whole scene where he shows them the marionette of
Scrooge.
That Ebenezer Scrooge.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
Right. That marionette that he shows them,
mm-hmm,
is what Robert Zemeckis used at. That's how he appears in the Christmas Carol that he did, the Disney one with Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah. Well, it looks just like him.
Yeah, that he did that movie as well. So that's where he kind of pulled that image from that.
That's a good one, too. I gave that a whirl for the first time 2 years ago, and I enjoy that one now.
Yeah, I
always like
one.
A Christmas Carol. Some of them could be a little daunting, but that one's a good one. We'll have to review one sometime.
We'll get that one day. I enjoy the flame in that.
I like the sound of it, but he's creepy with the.
Oh, that's it is a scary one. Yeah,
there's a lot of even with the ignorance and want later on. I mean, there's a lot of creepy stuff there with the Ghost of Christmas Future.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to that one eventually.
So they're rocking on top of the world, and eventually they leave. But he has this bell, and he put it into his pocket, and we see him put it into the pocket that has the hole in it. And that's when he's sitting on the sleigh, and they, you know, they're all on the train. They boarded the train. Well, no, before that, this is where, they have to get back on, and he has to punch the tickets again. And that is where he just starts punching everybody's ticket and filling in the letters with actual words now.
This is lead. Like lead balloon.
I believe it also was pronounced lead.
Dumbass.
Leader, leadership. Lead the way. Follow you anywhere, ma'am.
So hers is about leading. The annoying kid was about learning, and whatever he says, something about learn. Oh yeah, lean. What's that supposed to mean? And then he moves his finger. Ow, learn. My mistake. Lesson learned. but then he punches the kid. Not punches the kid, but punches the ticket of Chris Hero Boy, and we see that his letters turn into believe, but. Again, I think kind of going back to everything, which I literally, this just hit me now.
It says.
Nope. It's nothing I need to know.
Why would the conductor not need to know? Well, granted, yes, he punched the holes, but if that's Hero Boy in the future, he doesn't need to know. He already learned it, you know?
Yeah.
As far as that goes. So they're on the train, they're all going home, but before that, they all want to see the bell, and he goes to reach in, and the hole. You know, there's no bell in there because of the hole. Now, did you ever notice earlier in the movie when he has his ticket, he goes to put it in his pocket, it goes toward the pocket, but you never see it go into the pocket. It disappears with magic into the pocket.
Oh yeah. Like fades away, like ghost image away. Yeah.
So again, whatever's going on with this whole thing. He ends up going, you know, I was going to wrap up the movie itself. I don't know if you wanted to talk anything else here. Just I was going to mention about him getting home finally. And
yeah, that's about it. I think I had everything covered. I was just going to.
Oh, no, before I do. I forgot. So they drop off Max first, Billy, and he quick runs in. There's a tree there all of a sudden in the window, but he runs in and sees that gift. And he says that Santa was already here. So we see that gift. All right. So he has that gift, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, isn't that amazing? He's already here and whatever. So they finally get home. And I think because he wants to believe now, they drop him off. The conductor yells bye. And as the train's going away, you see the hobo waving on top of the train car. And then he disappears into nothing, into snow. But he looks in the living room and the stockings aren't filled. There's no presents under the tree and the cookies and the milk are still there. So even then it almost looks like, is there a little bit of doubt? I don't know, you know, because he was already in his town. So why doesn't he have the stuff yet? But he goes upstairs and then the next scene is literally the sister waking him up and to, you know, because it's Christmas. So he grabs his robe, the hole, whether it rips for the first time now in real life or it rips even bigger, marbles fell out. He rips the hole, goes downstairs. And pretty much doesn't really, I think it already shows all the gifts open except that they find the one. Now, here's what's curious, though, to me is that the gift that he opens, the wrapping is the same exact wrapping as Billy's. It's the red and the white wrapping with the green bow. And all the other gifts in Santa's bags were completely different other than that red and white stripe. And I don't know if there's anything, you know, if there's anything with that or not, like why the wrapping was identical for both of them. Maybe if you're on the train, you get special wrapping. I don't know. But
I don't think I ever noticed that either.
Yeah. So I just noticed it for the first time when I watched it this week for the podcast. But so he opens up this gift and there's a bell in there and we see a note from Santa.
Found this on the seat of my sleigh. Better fix that hole in your pocket. Mr. C.
So, again, this is where, kind of like you had said, now that we're at the end of the movie, this would lead you to believe that it wasn't a dream, because why would there be a physical bell there that the parents didn't even know was there?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I don't know.
But then what are all the other gifts about? What are the parents thinking in their head? You know, like... If it was from, but so here's the other theory now, not the other theory, but adding to this is that the father, the reason why Tom Hanks, besides maybe wanting to take all the roles and be greedy, which I doubt, is that the reason why they all sound the same, look the same, is because Santa Claus is actually his father. Like that was an not an adaptation, but the parents are the ones that are bringing the gifts. They're the true Santa. Of the family. They're the ones that are giving, and that's why Santa looks and sounds just like his father as well during this whole dream. That's what the kid knows. He gets these gifts on Christmas morning, so he's going to think, you know, portray Santa to look like his father and sound like his father. But again, the only weird thing would be the bell. All the other gifts, you could say, all right, well, yeah, the parents got it, and, you know, that's the whole Santa. I don't know if we talked about the way to, I think we did, but the way to break to your kids about Santa Claus is letting them know that, you know, that you are Santa, but now it's their turn to become a Santa. And like the year that you do that, you know, you make sure that they anonymously give a gift to somebody. And like, that's the spirit of Santa Claus. It's not an actual human being, but it's a process of doing something. And now it's your turn to become a Santa. And it kind of helps break the ice on exactly what's really been going on. So all this time they think that Santa's, you know, somebody's coming there. It's not, no, not really. But Santa's more of an idea than it is an actual person, if you will.
Yeah, I always wonder how you, like, the best way to do that. There's a lot of people out there that just pretty much don't tell their kids about Santa and let them, or let
they figure it out by school.
No, I mean, they tell them right away that there isn't one. Like,
oh yeah. Well, you know, my mentality always was, I work hard for these gifts for these kids. They're gonna know what they're gonna know right away.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's never happened.
So then they sit there, they ring the bell, but then the dad rings it, right?
Yeah, and they don't hear anything because he even says, "Huh, broken. Sorry, sport."
Right. So then, see, now that would, I don't see, that doesn't work with the theory then that the dad's Santa. You know what I mean? Because he can't hear it.
But no, but in the app, but no, not the real, not really Santa, as in
the, I mean, but then this, the whole spirit of it, or I don't know.
But the father knows enough. Like, I know it's weird. I know there's, I don't know. It's odd, but We do hear a very nice narration, and almost brings a tear to your eye when Sarah doesn't hear the bell anymore either, according to
Tommy Boy. Gets you.
It's the last clip I have as well. It's a little long, 36 seconds.
Friends could hear the bell, but as years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she could no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I've grown old, the bell still rings for me, as it does for all who truly believe.
And it fades into Believe by Josh Groban.
Yeah, that ending just gives you such good feelings. I don't know why. It's a sad ending, like, to say, yeah, in a couple of years, none of us believed.
Yeah, you know, well, so. Yeah. But again, it's just, it's, overall, I really enjoy the movie. I didn't think I would when I first, you know, when I told myself, all right, let's sit down and watch this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to expect. But you know me, I'm a sucker for music, and the music in this really pulls you in with a lot of it, too. I really, really enjoy the music. Little, you know, creepiness in a good way, like almost not scary, but you know what I'm trying to say? Just a little haunting, yeah. Hauntingness to parts of the movie, which I think really tie it in. I mean, that's exactly how... that his version then of A Christmas Carol is. I need to see if this guy does anything else or has anything upcoming, because he seems to have a certain way of doing things, because both of those movies are very similar in that respect.
Yeah, I don't know. I like you said, the music in this movie definitely plays a big part in it, and I like that, like, it's become so much that, like, that music, I don't know, like, when you hear it, like, it's not like you're, it does have your regular traditional Christmas songs in the movie, but it also has ones that are now Christmas songs because of this movie, you know?
Yep. And I, you know, one of my things in my rotation, because I'm listening to all Christmas music right now, is the song Seeing is Believing, and that's where we hear the you know, the music when you first, yeah, well, it's not the beginning, but also when you first start talking to the hobo. I love that. It, you know, it blends that in with the stuff at the end with Santa Claus. But, you know, if you want a combination of all that good music, it's 3 minutes, 47 seconds out there. Just go to YouTube, anybody, and just type in the Polar Express Seeing is Believing, or Alan Silvestri Seeing is Believing is what it's called. But, yeah, overall, I love this character that I'd want to be in this. absolutely, I think Hero Boy. Everything that he experiences gives me a good feeling. And even though he's you know, he's not believing, just for, like, unfortunately, we all know the truth. So if I want to bring that feeling back, I would love to be put on that train and go through all that to get that magic back. So I you know... it's probably the easiest one to pick, but I, without a doubt, he would be the one that I'd want to, the character I'd want to be.
Yeah. See, I'm going to go conductor on who I would want to be, just because
you get to light it every year.
Yeah. He's going there every year. He, it's just one certain night a year. It's always on Christmas Eve. So he's going there every year. He gets to experience all these kids, you know, still getting to see that Christmas magic. I don't know. Something about the conductor. I think I would like to be him.
Well, see, and I would think they're in their own little world of their own. They're in their own little time warp. So for the conductor, it might be year to year in real life, but for the conductor, that might be every night for him. Every night is Christmas Eve.
Well, it's, that's true. But yeah, maybe he's a time traveler. That's him.
You know, if that was your destined to do, you know, for eternity, why not? Why wait a whole year? Just get it, do it every day.
Yeah, so I'm going to go conductor on this one.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad choice either, actually.
Well, before we wrap up the episode, I'm going to go ahead and play a little commercial here.
Yeah, I meant to break earlier for that. Whoops.
Yeah, I forgot, but that's all right. Couldn't find anything too great, so we'll do this one. And it's just because you had mentioned something funny before we started recording.
December's coming.
Hi,
I get to be November? Where did the year go? Wasn't it just July 4th? Now it's time to cook the bird. The holidays will hit you
like a brick.
That's why this week at Old Navy, there's a bunch of super cool sweaters
and great new styles like Fair Isle turtlenecks, beaded cardigans,
and cable nippiness.
They sure are festive.
Exciting new sweaters starting at $19.50 this week at Old Navy.
I hope one of those are a tech vest.
Nope. No, no, the tech vest 2004, that wasn't the hit. No, but these were the caroling people that would just show up in grocery stores. I don't know if you remember that string of commercials. Old Navy always had some good holiday commercials, but yeah. This would just be like people shopping, and all of a sudden they would just like look in an aisle, and there would just be a bunch of a caroling group standing there, like wearing whatever they were singing about.
I don't see Old Navy commercials on much.
No, after they did those string with like Amy Poehler, like when they did all those where they would just like be like, where'd you get those? And they just run out of the places.
I remember that.
Off after those. I haven't seen them as much.
I think they're done for.
Maybe.
Well, I think they're all owned by, I think that's all like Banana Republic.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, the Polar Express, I love it. Watch it every year. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'll probably watch it. Probably watch it again. I don't know though. Who knows? Maybe I said to Aaron with us, you know, being down and going down to the hospital. I said I think on Monday or Tuesday, one of the days while we're just sitting bedside, I think I'm gonna put on Home Alone. That might give me a good feeling.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. I don't know. We could talk about this another time, but like Home Alone on, like, if they air it on TV, they've been cutting so much out of that every year. Like Home Alone 2.
You almost forget what the original's like.
Yeah, they cut out way too much anymore. Even though I own them all, if it's on TV, I'll watch them.
No, I do too, and that's usually where I catch a lot of this stuff, but you're right. Like, I knew movies really well, and then I've watched the same movie so many times on TV without watching the original. When I watch the original, then I'm like, crap, I forgot about that scene.
Yep.
You know, it much better in here, kid.
Yeah, they actually, on Home Alone 2, they cut out a few things. Like, remember, I'll just go over one part real quick. You know the part where he's throwing bricks off of the roof at their faces?
Yeah.
In the TV edit now, they're only down to throwing one brick.
Yep. I remember that.
Because I think in the actual movie, he throws three or four of them at his head.
There's quite a bit.
We'll save that for another episode.
Yeah, that'll probably be July.
Yeah, so we're going to be, this is episode, the second one in December. So
yeah, it is. So we got two more today. We already said that today was December 2nd. So we already recorded two podcasts before the first one even aired yet.
Yep. So, you know, you still have some time if you want to email us. You could do any of that stuff. TheHolidayBros@gmail.com.
Yep.
And it's also where you can find us on Instagram and Twitter, both at The Holiday Bros. And I don't know, I think you could just, I think on YouTube, it's just going to be YouTube. Is it youtube.com/TheHolidayBros, or how do you get to that?
Yeah, I believe the actual URLs for that. But if you just type in The Holiday Bros in YouTube, you'll find our channel there. But there's nothing there but the promo.
No, but what I'm going to do, I think this week, I had told you about it last week. I don't know if I told it off the air, but I had three packs of Cards Against Humanity cards from the different holidays, 2012, 13, and 14.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'm going to open up one of those a week for the next 3 weeks. Put a little video up of the cards that are in there.
As a little gift to yourself.
Yeah, why not? So we'll be doing the Cards Against Humanity 2012 holiday pack first.
Not bad.
So I'll get them put up there. Like I said, follow us on Instagram and Twitter, both at The Holiday Bros. And you know the email and theholidaybros.com. We're everywhere.
Sounds good. I'd say this one is a wrap, but if anybody else out there feels the way we do about this movie or even has your own theories, you know, if, like I said, I really got passionate into this movie as far as the conspiracy theories people have about it, but definitely send us your own or, you know, send your opinions, even if they're agreeing with us. By all means, we want to know if we're on the same page as other people or if other people have other great theories about this.
Yeah, I definitely have to dig into some theories. One other thing I wanted to mention real quick. This was nominated for 3 Oscars, and it was also it won, I think, 5 different awards, and it was nominated for 23 other awards. But, yeah, I forgot to mention that before.
Did it win?
But, yeah. No. It won, I think, 5 different ones, but it didn't. It was nominated for 23 or 26, something like that. But it, no, it didn't win. It won some of the awards, like some of the lower tier ones, but nothing major.
Like ones that you have to go over to like Europe to pick up?
Yeah, some of the smaller festival stuff it won at, which is a shame. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It would be completely different if it was made nowadays, though. I'd like to see it, but I don't. I like it.
I would like if they just did a teaser. Like they did that with they're finally making it, I think, but they did that with Final Fantasy 7 years ago. They redid the trailer that was so popular in 1997. They redid it with graphics as of 2 years ago, and it was phenomenal. Like, I would just love to see, like, a teaser scene of stuff done, you know.
Just remake the trailer.
I don't think I've ever seen the trailer. I might have to fire that up.
Give it a whirl.
Will do.
So, yep, you know how to get in touch with us. So for this episode of the Holly Bros, my name is Charlie.
And I'm Kevin, here to bid you farewell and... Oh, from
Holiday Bros.